Welcome to Spiritually Hungry. We are so excited to have our guest, Jordan Younger, with us today. She's been a public figure for over a decade. She started her public life as a vegan blogger. She was known as the Vegan Blonde. Now she has transitioned to the Balanced Blonde. She built a platform and she enjoyed it, and then she experienced health issues and started to restrict her diet even further, which led to a more complicated state of health. So there was a lot of buzz about her being a vegan, and then did veganism make her sick? And she's going to talk about that journey and so much more into who she's become today, her battle with Lyme disease that was really the cause of a lot of her health issues. Today, Jordan calls herself a spiritual teacher, healer, and psychic. She reads energy in others and lives her life in alignment with her spiritual beliefs. I think you're really going to enjoy this talk. So welcome, Jordan Younger. Welcome to Spiritually Hungry. We are so excited to have Jordan Younger with us here today. We've been together on podcasts before. We've been guests on yours and twice. Mm-hmm. And so we're so happy to welcome you on ours. There's so much to talk about. And I was also reading your book, Breaking Vegan. And there are so many, you guys should check it out. There's so many similarities that I didn't realize that we had actually, because when we, it's interesting. I think the conversations we've had until now have been really about where we are today. And so I hadn't really known about your past, and mine didn't come up that much either. But something we do have in common, I had anorexia and you had orthorexia, which a lot of people don't know about. And I kind of discovered that a few years ago. And as I understand it, Dr. Stephen Bratman, he coined that in the 1990s. But I didn't discover it till a few years ago. And I'm like, there's so many people I know that have this condition. So basically it's different than anorexia, because anorexia is more about, you know, you don't see yourself as you really are. You think you're fat when you're, you know, emaciated, among other things. I think some of the similarities is that it's a control issue is what it seems like to me. But orthorexia is kind of an obsession, correct me if I'm wrong, with eating healthy foods and only putting healthy things in your body to the point where you could even become malnourished. Is that right?
Correct.
So you suffered from both or just orthorexia?
Just orthorexia. So we're taking it all the way back. I wrote this book in 2014. So I was actually living in New York, and we were just talking about New York, and he said, are you familiar with the city? And I was living in the West Village, going to school and starting my blog and having orthorexia and just going through the whole, going through all the motions.
Because you were the blonde vegan, right?
At the time.
And that was your blog, right? And now you're the balanced blonde. So we're going to talk about that transformation. When did you realize that it had become a lifestyle, I guess, a vegan lifestyle, a healthy lifestyle to something that was taking a hold over you?
So I have learned so much in the last 10 years since I wrote this book. And I'm so happy now to be able to look back and talk about it in a different way, because I wrote that book and I'm so happy that you have it here today. I haven't had the chance to talk about it with people in forever because it's been a while. But I have learned a lot where I was so young. I was 22 in 2014. I was a new blogger. I had so much popularity, for lack of a better word, because there were not a lot of bloggers back then, especially in food. It was a vegan blog, and suddenly the blonde vegan is no longer vegan. And this broke the internet. And I was on CNN and Good Morning America and Australian news shows. Like, it was such a whirlwind. And I had no concept at the time of how that was maybe a little detrimental to become the poster child for orthorexia, which most people didn't know what that was. And to this day, I'm pretty sure if you Google orthorexia, there's a picture of me.
Really?
I mean, you guys can try and tell me. I haven't tried in a long time. Looking at the audience, you guys can try. And I don't love that, you know, now. I think at the time I was so caught up and just wanting to speak about what I was going through. And now looking back, I also know I had Lyme disease and was seeking to feel better through food. and through what I was putting in my body.
When did you first, I guess you don't really know.
I was diagnosed with Lyme in 2018, but I had symptoms starting as a teenager. So all the way back to probably 2005.
So you started to try to find a way to feel better.
Yeah.
And that probably led you to become a vegan.
So I had been living in this very inflamed body. Exactly. And I found this way of living that was anti-inflammatory and felt amazing. And I was making turmeric smoothies and spirulina juices back before that was a thing. Now that's a thing.
Yeah.
Everybody listening is like, yeah, we know what that is.
Well, back I think Starbucks might even have a turmeric drink
probably,
at this point. But yeah.
Back then I was in my 300 square foot apartment in the West Village, putting all these superfood powders into my blender and blogging about it. And then...
And it was making you feel better.
For a long time. So for 2 years, I mean, it felt like a long time when I was 22. For 2 years, felt incredible, felt healthy and energized, anti-inflammatory. I lost a lot of weight. I was just feeling on top of the world. And then I created a brand around it. And so, of course, it became the lifestyle and the identity and the brand. And I was so young and I was so caught up. And sometime in mid-2014, I had a friend in New York who came to me and she said, and she was also a blogger, a food blogger. She said, I think I'm anorexic and I think I have orthorexia. And
your friend
I have
said
my
that.
Friend about herself. And she said, I'm meeting with this therapist and nutritionist and suddenly I'm just realizing all these things about myself. And just through that conversation with her, I felt like, oh, I might have kind of an obsession here too, especially because I have an obsessive personality. So I started meeting with the same therapist and the same nutritionist, found out that I probably had orthorexia and immediately started blogging about it and immediately was on the news and then writing a book about it.
Let me ask you, is it because the media, they wanted to say, oh, wait, look, this vegan lifestyle is not healthy. It wasn't so much even about orthorexia. I mean, it was just a way to bash something that was popular or trending.
I have a lot of thoughts about this
because
I'm trying to be nice about it the way that I'm speaking, but it's like the media absolutely screwed me. Like it was.
You kind of think consciously?
Because that's the story. What's the sexy story?
The sexy story was veganism almost killed her.
Right.
That was the headline.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
And so I was walking around with a target on my back to the vegans for the last 10 years. Veganism almost killed her. And I've always been saying, no, it never. It never almost killed me. I'm a huge proponent of the plant-based lifestyle. I'm just an extreme person. And I'm just one person sharing my story. And I was so young and the whole thing got really huge. But now I also know I had an autoimmune condition and I was trying to feel better. And yes, I was obsessive. And yes, I think a lot of young women, we turn to food to control. And I had so many things going on in my family. So not only was I feeling better, but this was a sense of control. And I think we've talked about this with food. So there are definitely a lot of overlaps with anorexia. And I mean, I had a little bit of bulimia. There was stuff going on underneath the surface.
I read in your book also, there were a few points that stood out to me. You talked about how, it was interesting. It seemed like whenever you felt pain or out of control, mostly about romantic relationships, the go-to was food restriction, which I understand that whenever I had felt stressed, I'd over-exercise and under-eat, no question. It was like that was the formula to make me feel better. But we had another similarity in that you talk about, it's the cutest way you wrote about it, that you were in your Gap bathing suit?
Oh, yeah.
And you were nine, I think, and you were swimming with your cousins. Because I was that kind of kid. I was like a tomboy out and like swimming all day long. I lived in New Orleans, like with my cousin. And so you get out of the pool and you're feeling like all great. You know, you've got your new swimsuit on.
Yes.
And you overhear your mom and your older sister talking. And you hear your older sister say, no, I don't think that she's gained weight or that she's chubby. I think that that's, and then you suddenly realized it was about you and you felt insecure and you started to go listen closer and then you didn't really feel good about yourself in that same way. But I had a story with my older sister and it was the beginning and you call it an awareness. I think that's really what it is. It was the first time I actually paused and thought, oh my God, should I be concerned with how I look? It was the first time I saw myself externally as other people see me.
Exactly.
Or might see me. It hadn't even a thought before then. But I was with my sister, who I adored. She's 4.5 years older than I am. And I think I kind of worshipped her, you know, like she was my older sister and I just thought she was the coolest thing. And she asked me to go to dinner one night and I was like, wow, she wants to be alone with me, go to a restaurant. So we went, just the two of us, and I was so elated. And I remember we walked home from the restaurant and I was still very tomboyish. I had not gone through puberty yet. I didn't have curves yet. So when I got closer to my house, I started to do cartwheels and skip and, you know, as you just like spring into joy. Mm-hmm. And then when we got to the front door, I'm waiting for her to come. She has the keys and she's like, oh, I can see it's happening. And I was like, what? And she said, I see the cellulite starting the back of your thighs.
Now I can
tell you today that was impossible because again, I was like tomboyish, but then I didn't even know what cellulite was, but I knew I didn't want it.
Yeah.
So I went into the bathroom and I'm like, what's going on? It was the beginning of a fear for me that had developed. But anyway, that was like, it was interesting to see the commonalities.
It's crazy that parents, siblings do this. I mean, it still happens today.
Often. I mean, that's kind of why I wanted to talk about it today too, because we spend a lot of time mentoring young adults and teenagers. And I heard a story just 2 weeks ago about a girl who has gained some weight and her father, I'm sure he does not mean to do this, but he's fat shaming her. Like he makes her get on the scale in front of her siblings and to look. And, you know, I sure.
It's not good. No, I mean, I think a lot of parents don't know how to talk about it and don't know how to bring it up. Do you bring it up? I think in our cases, there was nothing to have even brought up. I was not an overweight child. And I can remember this so clearly. And because I wrote this book so long ago, you're bringing back a memory that I'm so grateful to talk about. But yeah, I can still remember getting out of the swimming pool. And my sister is about 20 years older than me. So this is like two adults talking. Right. And I just hear her say to my mom, no, she doesn't look chubby to me. And I'm looking around, I'm like, who's she? I'm the only girl out here. And I just remember thinking, my mom would say that about me? My mom looks at me that way? Like, and I just kind of realized, and I was so young, but something must be wrong or I must have gained some weight. It's just so hard when you're that young because you do not see yourself externally. And I had never had a thought like that in my life. And my mom now doesn't remember having had that conversation.
I'm sure.
And she's read the book, of course.
Oh, really? Yeah. What was her reaction?
Well, she said, I don't remember that at all. And it doesn't sound like something I would do, but I'm sorry. And I mean, she's always willing to apologize and own what she didn't know at the time. And it doesn't sound like something she would do, but it happened. So I mean, I'm still grateful that my sister said, no, I don't think so, because I held on to that. And I'm like, I think I pretty much look fine. But it was definitely an awareness. And all of my friends were stick thin. And I was just a normal, healthy body, just exactly what you would imagine that to look like. And so I did start to compare myself and think about myself in those ways.
It's so interesting, right? Because of course, that wasn't your mother's intention. It probably was her own fear or feelings about how maybe she felt when she was a kid or how she wants her children to look or whatever. We're all complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually with not a bad intention. But I think so often, you know, we don't realize the power of our words, our opinions, especially to the people that we love. So I want to go back to that. So that point where then you decide not to be a vegan anymore. And then did you start to realize that you needed to get help for Lyme? How did you become healthy then through that process?
Yeah, it was a journey. So 2014, I started seeing the therapist in New York. And that was a complicated time too, because I actually look back to those conversations with that therapist and it was not a good situation. Mm-hmm. I think I was being fed a lot of projected information about what she thought I was going through, projected information about my family. And it was so confusing. And I had been in therapy since I was 5. So it wasn't the first interaction with a therapist.
Why
but it
so
was
early.
So when I was 5, my parents were worried because I was just pretty obsessive. So they thought maybe, does she have OCD or does she have, I mean, like a sensory disorder, which back then I don't think there was a word for that, but I wanted to wear my clothes inside out and I was sensitive to everything, sensitive to sound and to light. And
that's so interesting.
They had never met a person like this or had a child like this. And they were concerned. The therapist said, she's totally normal. She has a lot of emotions. She feels comfortable to express them to you. This is really positive. And thankfully, that was
a good experience. One. Yes.
And she was a therapist that I saw kind of off and on all until after high school. And then, yeah, so I got help for the orthorexia through various ways, like therapy, nutritionists. I moved back to LA and I started seeing a functional medicine doctor. Also way early in terms of functional medicine. Everybody has a functional medicine doctor now. Back then, it was amazing that there's a doctor who's willing to do blood work and test your stool and talk about parasites and gut dysbiosis and candida. Mm-hmm. And I had all of it. Wow. And so it really helped me to see.
Wow.
I was not healthy, even though I looked healthy and all these things. And I was just trying to feel better through food. And I just gave myself a lot of grace. I wasn't trying to deprive myself. I wasn't trying to cut out all the foods that are not like perfectly clean vegan. But that's what happened. And I think just giving yourself forgiveness. I don't know if you feel this way about your journey. I have so much compassion for the younger version of myself.
Oh, I say that too.
Because she was really
so hard on
doing
herself.
The best she could. I'm so happy that I discovered a way of life that I thought was working at the time. And it was. I just took it too far for too long. I think maybe sometimes it's positive to do a vegan cleanse or like these smoothie cleanses, especially if you have candida and all the stuff that I had. But you don't have to live that way for years. It's meant to be a cleanse or a time, which maybe cleanse isn't the best word to use, but
well,
detoxing.
Yeah. And I understand the cleanse. It's like you need to take a, I think it's healthy for all of us to take a break from lifestyle in general, right? Too much stress, too much sugar, even too much of it, right? So I think that to take little moments in time where you step away from what your normal thing is. And of course, people are on different spectrums, right? Some people eat relatively clean. And so maybe they don't need as many detoxes or they don't need to go on them for so long. But I think it really, I mean, gut health, people don't, the gut is the first brain and people don't, I mean, they're talking more about it now, but I don't think many realize the importance of that, you know, allowing your body to have time to rest between digesting and not to eat too close to bedtime. Like those very basic, right? That's not even like, but I think many times we just don't follow that.
We can just go a little bit back because when we do a podcast, Monica, I often like to underscore things that I think are so important.
Yeah.
And the conversation we're having about, you know, both of your experiences as children, and I'm thinking, you know, I know now you're pregnant with your second child, and as we think about our kids as they were growing up and as they continue to grow up, I think it's such an important message for parents and siblings, but for parents that you know, one word, right, can have impact both positive, but unfortunately negative for the rest of that child's life.
Absolutely.
And I don't think, you know, I don't think there's definitely not enough awareness around enough parents about that.
We've talked about on our podcast about conscious parenting. And it's one of the topics I wanted to actually talk to you about is spirituality. And if you have a spiritual practice and how you bring that into parenting or even with your husband, who's lovely, we've met him, but as a couple. And I think that, you know, the only kind of residue really with anorexia for me is body dysmorphia. So if I look in the mirror, I really often can't see what I accurately look like. If I really care, like I'm wearing a dress to a wedding, I might take a picture in the mirror and then I'll look at the picture and I can see the picture.
Oh, interesting.
So it's just like those kinds of, you know, it's the residue, it's what's left over. But I was very aware. And once I discovered this too, and I didn't know that when I had it, but that it's genetic, there is a gene. And when I discovered that, I was like, oh, I went back through like all the women in my family.
With her grandmother.
And my aunt and my mother. And it's just,
what's the gene? I wonder if I have it.
Well, it's just, it also is something that needs to, just because a person has it doesn't mean it's going to be awakened, right? Mm-hmm. So it also has to do with environment. It has to do with dynamics in the household, especially relationships with usually mother-daughter. Mm-hmm. We're seeing it between the parents, also outside peer pressure. For me, it was like the perfect storm of all of it. Mm-hmm. You know, I had every single angle and I was insecure, you know? Mm-hmm. So with my daughters, but even sons, because we don't talk about this enough with men. I mean, I know somebody who has orthorexia, he's a man. And it's just like, that's when I discovered it was 10 years ago because I was watching his eating. I was like, he's not anorexic, but what is this? Because the obsession about like only certain foods. And so then I started to do my research. That's how I discovered it.
Oh, wow.
Because I'm just super curious anyway. But with my daughters, especially, I've been very open about my process, but I also very consciously made sure that I was healthy around them always and that dessert is not a sin. And that if you're going to eat it, you know, put it in front of you. It's okay. You don't have to put it like three plates to the right and take little nibbles.
Yeah, this is something that happens in Monica's family. It's very funny having dessert because when we go out to dinner with her family, nobody orders dessert.
You know, my family listens to our podcast. Oh, really? Okay. Just saying, no, go ahead.
No, I love spending time with your family. You say. That's all I have to say. That's all I have
to say. Go ahead.
No, it's just very funny to see the way, because again, I grew up in a completely different way, you know, probably not eating healthy, but there was no sort of
I was mortified when we got married. I was like, you know, this was made 20 years ago and there are so many preservatives in this that you can still eat it. Now you have to stop eating these things.
Right. But still everybody ate whatever they wanted and there was never any worry or shame or even conversation about it. And every once in a while we go to dinner with Monica's family. No, first of all, nobody wants to order dessert. Eventually a few get ordered somehow and everybody's pushing it to the other person, even though they also want it.
Exactly.
It's a very interesting dynamic.
Like, this is so good. You take it. Yes. I have seen. Yeah. I definitely am familiar.
Yeah. But even, you know, and especially I've tried to have a very open and continue open conversations with my children about anything so that there's never any shame. I want them to feel comfortable to tell me anything, even the things that they're most embarrassed about. And so I think that that's really part of the healing. Like, let's have whatever your insecurities are, we're all going to have them, but to really create a healthy space and environment. Mm-hmm. Do you see any of your old tendencies even come up just as being a mom now, like the obsessions with things or?
It's interesting. I mean, I think it's so different having a boy and then having a girl, and I'm going to be looking to you guys for inspiration. Absolutely. Because I always knew from a young age that I was going to have a boy first. Mm. I was 5 years old and I felt this connection to a future his son and probably also a future daughter. But now knowing that I'm having a daughter, I have a lot more fears. And I think it's because I know what it's like to grow up as a little girl and the dynamics between mothers and daughters and girls and their friends. And I have so much more personal fear. Whereas with Atticus, my son, he's just such a ball of joy. I've actually never met such a happy human. And he's a toddler, so of course he should be. But this is also his personality. This is his aura, his essence. I'm not really worried about him in terms of, I see there was like an older kid at the playground who ripped Atticus's basketball away and was really mean about it. And I was so mad. I was like, I'm going to go up to this kid. Like, that is not nice. You do not treat a baby. He's a toddler. Anyways, I let it go. But Atticus just has like, oh my God.
When
was
you
like,
have them, how much I would have let it go.
I know, I become a lioness when people are like, I mean, with my cubs.
I think I would have said more, but I was like, oh, I don't know. I'm just not going to. But I liked seeing his reaction. And also maybe it's his age, but it just didn't faze him. And I was so happy because it would have fazed me. And I know a lot of kids who would have instantly been crying and I would have been one of those kids. So I think with him, I don't have a lot of stuff coming up around myself as a child, if that makes sense, yet. He's only not even 2.5, so we'll see. I do think with a daughter, it's going to be different. And I'm trying to mentally prepare, emotionally prepare, because like you said, I want them to come to me with anything and have conversations that I didn't have growing up. And my parents were amazing and we're so close to this day, but so many things were not talked about. My dad was volatile. He was a yeller.
Big time.
Yeah, I think it's
a good person, but he just put in
control elements later in life.
That's interesting.
And he still does. And now I told Atticus, my son, to tell my dad yesterday, You're not allowed to yell at mommy.
Oh, he still does?
Yes. He has a horrible temper. He's almost 80 and he's calmed down, but he's still loving.
He's still yelling. He must have been he's older now and he's still,
yeah. You should have seen him. And he had me when he was 44. He had my sister when he was 17. Oh, so wow. What I hear is that he was
17.
Much worse at a young. I mean, look, he's amazing. And any of my followers who are listening, he's a wonderful dad with a horrible temper. And it's just,
I said that my father passed almost 3 years ago. And I always say he was like an amazing, he taught me love, like beautiful person, but he just couldn't handle stress at all.
Exactly.
And when he felt stressed, he just, this is, that's what came out. And I think just generally, generationally, well, we have so much information and we have so much at our fingertips in terms of access to tools and meditation. Like, I think in their time, it was just like, be successful, provide for your family. There wasn't a lot of time for this kind of conversation.
But I think it's an important point. Again, and we do speak about this, but that parents love their kids, right? And there's no, I'm sure your dad definitely loved you, but we're not always aware that how we behave, forget it, we spoke before about certain things that we should not say to our kids, but just the way we behave, the energy we have in the house has a long-term impact on our children and their happiness and their lives. So I hope that any parent listening and who has, you know, whether because of stress, you know, really says, well, I really love my kids. So even though maybe my natural reaction to one thing or another might be to yell, to raise my voice, But how much don't you love your kids more than that reactive behavior? And to really understand that it actually does have a long-term effect. And, you know, and that's why when we try with our kids from when they're younger and even till now, when you're around them, you want the environment in the house, you want the energy in the house to be a calm one, to be a happy one. And I don't think there's enough awareness amongst enough parents about how much our behavior, our direct interaction with our children, but our behavior in the home has a direct impact, not only on their lives now, but for the rest of their lives.
It does. It does. And I've tried to share that with my dad. He kind of gets it. So he tries to understand. Funny, we were talking about human design a little while ago. My dad's a reflector and I'm a reflector. And that's the 1% of the population. So we are mirrors to each other. Mm-hmm. And we butt heads. We're very similar and we're very different. And I'm very confronting to him because every fear he's ever had about finances and stress, I'm the opposite way. And he just can't handle it. But he loves it.
He wants you to stress? Or
he wishes probably that I would stress more because it's just...
He thinks you'll take it
like
seriously.
It's the only thing he knows how to do, really. Like, but he's also the person who could have more money than anyone and say that he has nothing. So, I mean, it's like we could do a whole analysis. Yes. It's a whole thing. where was I going with this? So
that you spoke to him. You said you confronted him.
Oh, yes,
about,
thank you. Yeah. So I spoke to him and many times, and I've done everything to try to heal from the inside out, from meditation to plant medicine ceremonies to spirituality, faith, everything. And in plant medicine specifically, I have had these major downloads of ancestral remembrances and my paternal lineage coming through me and showing me, oh, this is so real. And we know it's real and we're talking about it. Mm-hmm. It lives in our DNA. And I've been on journeys in that setting with my dad's parents, and they've passed many years ago, and how they've shown me how all of my dad's children carry traits that come from long, long, long ago. And they come out differently in all of us. And when I really think about it and I reflect, that behavior at home when I was a kid, it influenced everything. And I would love to know who I would be if they're just interestingly, because I think nothing happens. There's no mistakes and no coincidences that I chose this life. I chose him as my father, and I think he's been my father in many, many lives. But I would love to know who I would be without all that. And I've told him, like, this is why I have issues. And he's like, I know. I mean, he doesn't really deny it.
That's interesting.
Well, what's your relationship with your mother?
We're very close. We're best friends, close as can be. there's definitely some stuff that has come up around, she's a very reserved person. And I never really felt that she stuck up for me or herself as much as I wish. And she knows that. Actually, I think she does a lot more now, but I'm 33 now. So, I mean, that whole childhood, I think it would have been nice to see her really say to him, no, like in front of me. But she tells me that she did behind closed doors. And she had this whole idea of parenthood that should, like, you should align with your spouse, especially in front of your child. And that was like all the parenting books that she had ever read. So she was doing the best that she could.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting.
It's interesting. Mm-hmm. I often look back at the different things that shaped me. And I remember years ago, I just came to the conclusion that it's no disrespect to my parents or any process that I went through as being their child, but sometimes your parents teach you what not to be. So I felt like seeing certain behaviors, actually, I made a choice at a very young age that I made a note of this. I know how I feel. It's not great. And this is not going to be part of my future. Mm-hmm. So I chose a man, for instance, that would never yell,
like, yes,
ever, you know, where I was safe to tell anything to without any shame whatsoever. Just the different things that were painful for me. I think I made a very conscious choice about who I wanted to marry and also more importantly, perhaps who I wanted to be in the marriage, mm-hmm, you know, the different style of like the roles, you know, of mm-hmm what a woman should be in the house and what a man should be in the house. I didn't buy into that either.
Totally.
Yeah. Do you think your choice of husband was influenced?
I just want to say, you are 100% super calm. Like your energy, whenever I'm around you, I just feel just like zen. And you're saying, I wonder who I would be, you know, if my father was. But I actually think that this is who you are because of.
Yeah, that. That's a good way to look at it.
That's mm-hmm why I'm sharing my story, because I feel like, I don't know if you're aware of that, but I think that you somewhere made a decision long ago mm-hmm that you were going to present yourself and live very differently than your father
absolutely
did. So I wouldn't say, who would I be if not? I'd be like, well, this is, you know,
mm-hmm, yeah,
just my take.
I love that way of looking at it. And it's true. I did decide that I'm going to be so different than him. I remember being 11 years old, looking in the mirror to myself, talking to myself, calling in myself at an older age. I was always doing these spiritually minded things, didn't know what I was doing, saying, come protect me, older self, and just tell me how different I'm going to be from him, because I'm never going to yell at my kids. I'm never going to live in a home with a husband who yells. I'm just never going to make these choices. And even my mom, seeing her pretty much go silent in compared to whenever he would yell, that's why I always stood up for myself. And my dad says, I'm the youngest of four kids. I was the first kid and the only kid who wasn't afraid of him. And he did not know what to do. And it's funny to talk to him now, because he's like, yeah, I think looking back, it's funny because you were always right. Everything you said was always right. And he just couldn't express it in the moment, because I was like a five-year-old telling him, you're crazy. You've lost your temper. Like, you're not even making sense. And then it would prompt him to think, oh my God, she's right. But I can't show that.
So you probably had to come with more force.
So I was always defending myself to him. And then I chose a partner who is incredibly calm. You guys have met Jonathan. Yeah. I mean,
he seems funny too.
He's hilarious. He doesn't yell. I mean, after we had kids and we got a little sleep deprived and things were crazy, he yelled for the first time a couple of times. But he knows now, sorry, but that activates something in my nervous system that you just can't do with me. It's very dangerous for me. And I still have a lot of work to do around it. But it's not, we can't yell. We can't show our kids yelling. So important to me. Yeah, totally understands. Yeah.
We talk about this a lot. This is an example of emotional intelligence. You've given him a part of your history and your mm-hmm past. And then when he showed you a part of him now, you're like, wait a second, it's not about you yelling today. But when you do this, this takes me back to my five-year-old self.
Exactly.
And I'm like fight or flight. And this is just not good for our family. We had that in our marriage too. Early on, things that wouldn't make sense were not such a big deal. And I was like, what? You know, it was not about what he did in that moment. It was about where it took me to. I mean, there were a few triggers, but I remember when he started to say things like, oh, you know, you should have done blah, 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 or you really should, or you could have. And I was like, I'm not gonna listen to anything. You're just like, because my father was, it was all, and that's part of the shame, right? You should have done this, you should have done that. But then of course, when I explained to him why, that just shuts me down and I will never listen. Then, you know, because he's a thoughtful person and we're about transformation and change, then obviously he met me with that.
And something you said also reminded me of something we try to do in our home is that, you know, certainly in the previous generation, there was this idea of, you know, you have to be strong in front of your kids, you don't apologize. And I remember a few times, and it's been very powerful for me with our kids, where it wasn't, you know, whether we say something or behave in a certain way, where, and then they come to us and say, you know, this hurt me in this way, or, you know, you raise your voice and I don't think you should have. And it's not always easy, but I'm always happy after apologizing for something I shouldn't have done, or something that I should have done differently. And again, I think, you know, as we talk to our listeners, to parents out there, of course, it doesn't mean you apologize all the time. And of course, often, hopefully you'll be right and the child will be wrong. But when it's the right time, I think it brings a tremendous amount of both closeness and respect. When your kids see that when you think you did something wrong or behaved in a way that you shouldn't have towards them, you're willing to apologize. It doesn't make you look weak. It actually makes you look much stronger to them.
It does. Well, yeah, it's brave to apologize. It's hard. It's a hard thing to do, especially for parents to children. And I can count on one hand the times that my dad has apologized to me, and they've all been within recent years because he finally gets it. And I had this one little Instagram story go kind of viral because this was a couple months ago. We had gotten into a bit of a big argument, because my son, he spends a lot of time with my parents. They live for him. He lives for them. It's such
a special. They live down in LA? They live down here?
They split their time. Oh. So they're here half the time, if not more. And they live in our building when they're here.
Oh, wow.
So he gets to go up there and spend so much time with them.
Nice,
and it's the best. And I am very, 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 very intense about not using chemical cleaning products. I'm all non-toxic. I've had so many health issues. We're in Mary Ruth's home. Like, she's like this as well. Like, that's kind of how I am. And my dad, my parents have pretty much transitioned to mostly natural products, but he had this, just the worst, like old school Dawn in his, in the kitchen. And I saw that he was cleaning all of my son's plates and bowls and spoons with it. And I was like, what are you doing? And at first I tried to stay calm. I know how to communicate with my dad to get a good result. And he immediately loses his temper. And he's like, this is my house and I want to do things the way that I do it. And if you want our help, and they're so helpful to us, like, we're going to do it our way. And blah, blah, I would never do anything that would be bad for his health. And look how great we all turned out. We've been using this forever. I'm like, oh my God. So I absolutely lost it. I'm pregnant. I had a hormonal breakdown. I was just like, I'm taking my son. We're leaving. We're not. We're going downstairs. I'm not talking to you, looking at you. You yelled at me in front of my child. Like, this whole thing. And a few hours later, my dad texted me an apology. I think it's easier for him to text than to maybe say it out loud. And it was this whole, I'm very sorry. I never should have done that. I threw away the Dawn, which for him is a huge deal. And would never do anything to hurt Atticus's health. And I'm very sorry. It was very wrong of me to lose my temper. And I love you. And it was so shocking. I posted it to my story and everyone was dying over, like, by the way, I threw away the Dawn, because it was just such a cute, funny little thing. And I appreciated it. I mean, nobody's perfect. Maybe the way that I'm being so open makes him sound extra crazy, but it's just like real life dynamics.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. No, 1,000%.
Did you speak? Did he speak an apology afterwards?
I made him. I mean, I'm pretty stern with him. I kind of treat him like I'm in control. I always have been that way my whole life. So I did. I said, thank you for apologizing. And you do have to say it to my face. And I need to know this isn't going to happen again. And
especially in front of yours.
Yeah. And I'm not just being, you know, a brat about the products. Like, these are not something I believe in. This is not something that my child uses. This is not good for our health. I have had health issues my whole life. I'm doing things very, very differently. And he's like, I know. That's right. The whole thing he totally retracted. So
you've recovered from Lyme.
I believe I have. I haven't done any recent lab work on purpose because I found just kind of knowing that I do have it really influenced the way that I felt every day. Mm. And I feel really good. Mm-hmm. I feel healthy. I've had 2 healthy pregnancies, which I was told I would never have.
Really? Because mm-hmm. of the... Because,
right. They said you mm-hmm. might, God forbid, be infertile, mm-hmm. right?
Exactly. Wow. And there's a whole thing about passing Lyme to children and you shouldn't have kids, quote unquote. It's a very controversial
really?
Topic. So to really heal as much as possible before you get pregnant, which I did do. And yeah, my son is so healthy wow. and
that's very interesting.
Has no issues.
You know, it reminds me, have you heard of Dr. Ellen Langer?
I don't think so.
She's called, she's been a professor at Harvard for the past 50 years studying mindfulness. And she's mm-hmm. called the mother of mindfulness.
Oh, wow.
And so
talks about body-mind unity, not just connection, but unity. And it's exactly the point you're making in that whatever you think you yes. are.
Yeah.
And
I believe it.
And for instance, because it's interesting you said about the Lyme disease not wanting to do the test, she uses an example of people who are told by the doctors that they're pre-diabetic. Mm-hmm. And I forget the exact measurement, whatever it is, let's say it's 0.7. And above it, a person is told by the doctor they're pre-diabetic. They could be literally marginally below that line and they're told that they're healthy.
She goes into the whole thing with like, what's the difference with one number, right? So 69 mm-hmm. years old, but then 70 years, like she does this with a lot and she does experiments to follow it, to make her point with this, that mm-hmm. what's really the number. So if you're one below or you're one above, but go ahead.
Yeah, but the mm-hmm. crazy thing is, and this is scientifically proven according to her studies, that the people who were told that they were pre-diabetic developed diabetes at a rate, I forget the number, maybe like 70% of those people developed diabetes.
Yes.
The people who were right below the line, which means they were basically at the same place where those other people were, did not. They developed maybe 10% of them developed diabetes. And that idea that how we think, so we are. But and this is really her life's work, but study after study after study, the idea that how we think about ourselves influences and our health influences it much, much more than medication.
Absolutely. I'm such a huge, huge believer because I knew when I was diagnosed with Lyme and I was so sick at that time and I was so grateful to have a diagnosis and a doctor who understood and could help. But I felt awful all the time. And then I did years of healing from 2018 onward and everything one could try from Lyme, from supplements, IVs, antibiotics, ozone, stem cell wow. therapy, hyperbaric chamber therapy, wow. plant medicine retreats, working on the spiritual. I went to Bali for a whole summer, like working with healers. I did so much. And I call myself a human guinea pig. And I also enjoy that kind of stuff. So, I mean, I like wellness. I like that kind.
I enjoy
stuff.
Most of everything you said.
Yeah. I did water fasting, which I don't recommend. You know, water for weeks on end.
How long? For how many weeks?
For 3 weeks.
Wow.
With doctors at a medical facility. I did that 4 times.
Really?
I was covered in hives head to toe.
From that?
Before that. And that took it away. I basically researched anything and everything.
Well, you said you wouldn't recommend that. Why?
I wouldn't recommend it to most people. Okay, especially because of what we've been discussing earlier on. I always kind of make that disclaimer. I recommend it to people who need it. It can shrink tumors. There's incredible research. There's people who are blind who could see again.
Really?
People who couldn't walk who could walk again. It's very helpful for diabetes, for cancer, for Lyme, but it just has to be the right person. And I think people know if you're willing to try anything and you can barely live your life because you're so sick, then it's worth it. Wow. I just don't recommend it to the average person who's trying to biohack a little bit more health. I think there's way other things to do. And yeah, so I knew that I should be feeling healthier after all these years. And I didn't. And then I finally just worked on the mindset element. And that's hard to do because I have hard days. I have days where I have no energy and I feel like a sick person. And I call myself a sick person and I get whole backed and sucked into the cycle. But most days I remain really positive and I have mantras. I tell myself I'm a healthy person mm-hmm. and I have energy and I have healthy children and I live a healthy life. And that is, I believe, how to live a healthy life.
Well, is that why you're, I guess that's the balance in the blonde, right? Mm-hmm. That is, so how do you maintain, what does balance look like to you in terms of body, mind, and spirit? Are you, and by the way, are you an intuitive eater now? Or is there, because it's interesting, you know, I always teach my children and our students, like, don't get stuck on labels. When you label yourself as something, and you look at all the things that go under that title, you need to be all of those things, mm-hmm, right? And then totally. That can be good or bad. I mean, even when I had anorexia, I didn't even want to call it that. I was just like, there is dis-ease in my body, not a disease, exactly. but dis-ease. And I need to figure out what that balance is, basically. But even I remember when I was a vegetarian most of my life, and then I wasn't, or I was a marathon runner for most of my life. And then I decided I wanted to start dancing because running didn't feel as good anymore. And I was like, well, if I'm not that thing that, you know, you say you're a marathoner, right away you think, oh, well, she's disciplined, she's athletic, that's respectful. Like, but so if I'm not that, then what am I? Right. So yeah. We can get stuck in that kind of thing. So how do you find balance then?
Well, first of all, I was a marathon runner too.
Really? We have so much in common. That's so funny.
And my husband still, he does Ironman.
Wow.
I don't know if we told you guys that, but he's like disciplined, but he just does it for fun.
Yeah. So, it should be that way, by the way, now. Yeah.
So I eat intuitively. So after the whole breaking vegan and the healing, I actually became vegan again a few years after I wrote that book. Mm-hmm. And I really claimed that title again. And part of it was because I had so much hate from the vegan community. And I really, it was so confusing because I had such a public image as a vegan, non-vegan. I was just showing everybody, no, look at me, I'm plant-based. I look at my recipes. Like, it was a whole thing, but I felt amazing. And that actually helped me do a lot of healing from Lyme. Was this salt, oil, sugar-free vegan diet, post-water fast. Uh-huh. So I did that for many years and developed recipe books and specifically for people who are healing from chronic illness. And then when I was pregnant with Atticus, I started craving meat. And I knew from the whole journey that I had been on, spiritual awakening I had been on, I have to listen to mm-hmm. my body. And it's hard because I do love a lot of what the plant-based world stands for, but I more love taking care of my body and giving my body what it needs. So now, yeah, there's pretty much nothing that I don't eat. Always healthy, always grass-fed, organic. I'm an Erewhon girl, but I do eat. I know I eat everything.
It's funny because mm-hmm. with my first child, my first is a boy also, and I was vegetarian up until that point. And I only started eating fish because the doctors at that time, I was anorexic. They're like, your heart, you need to have some fat oils. I mean, there's other ways to do it, but I was, anyway, but when I had David, I was like, I need to have steak once a week. Absolutely mm-hmm. must have it. And I did. I respected that too. Mm-hmm. And I felt that that was, you know, I'm an intuitive eater. I think that that is the best way to be. Of course, you have to be, which is probably, I think we've kept you a long time, but I want to ask you one more question and it leads into that intuitive eating. So that works if you're in touch with your body, mind, and spirit and mm-hmm. you allow them to speak to one another. So you have shared, I believe, that you have psychic and intuitive mm-hmm. abilities. Did you always have those and how did you develop them?
Mm-hmm. So I always did. But I turned them off at a very young age because I wasn't really in a household where people believed that that was true. And I was relieved when they told me none of that is true.
Mm. You actually had a conversation with your parents?
Well, looking back, I understand now. At the time, I didn't understand. I saw spirits.
You did.
I saw angels. Mm. I saw ghosts. I saw bad energies, good energies. I could kind of see the future in some ways. And my parents really told me there's no such thing as ghosts. And I promise, because I would like sit them down. I was obsessive. So I'm like, you have to promise there's no such thing as ghosts.
Because I hug you at 5 years old, that little cute thing. Just like,
oh yeah,
listen
there's
to
like
me.
Really dark energies in the corner of my room. Like maybe they lived here before we lived here. There's something going on. And they had told me, no, 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 it's not real. And that was at the time, it was fine. It was good for me to hear that because I was able to move on, have a normal childhood, really let a lot of those fears go. And then when it reawakened, it was in my 20s and kind of during the whole Lyme journey, because that took me on such a journey to realize I've been suppressing this spiritual part of myself for my whole life. And even though as a teenager, I loved yoga and I loved being in the yoga communities, because I really felt like this is such a beautiful spiritual way to live. They're talking about compassion and Buddhism, and I really aligned with that. And then I later realized why. It's because I am this spiritual being having a human experience, and I'm obsessed with all this kind of stuff, and it's amazing. And then I was probably about 25 when I reawakened the psychic abilities. And that's been just a very incredible journey that has also helped me heal. And it's another reason why I don't really look at the blood work for Lyme. I look at how I feel, how my higher self tells me what my purpose is, that I'm here. I think I'm always going to be living in a sensitive body, managing what that looks like. And that's okay.
So psychic, the messages come to you in dreams, or do you have visions, or is there some kind of practice you do to connect to that?
So I have a practice, and it's taken me a while to hone in on it because I'm a very fly-by-the-seat-of-my-pants kind of person. So I used to just kind of—
You're a Sag, right?
Well, my son's a Sag. I'm a Libra.
Libra.
I'm very Libra. And with an Aquarius rising, Cancer moon, and feeling everything. And
my moon's Cancer, too.
Yeah, I remember that. So I used to just hear things kind of from people who have passed on, and it would come to me out of my control. And I thought it was very cool, but it
but
was hard
know
to
the people?
Control. Yeah, usually it was like a message for someone who I was with or someone that I was close to. And then I developed a practice where I channel from, I call it the fifth dimension. So it's like fifth dimensional consciousness, the angelic realm. Sometimes it's people who've passed on. Sometimes it's these star beings. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of who I talk to all the time. And then the Akashic Records.
So, and then you ask them specific questions, or you ask them if they have a message?
I just kind of open the channel and it just comes through. So I'm a very verbal channel. So I'll sit and open the channel with them, do a little prayer, and then just ask them, what do you have to say? And I film it because it's not something that I can really write down or anything. I used to write it down, but then I realized that it's hard because it's taking you in and out, and right. I just like to be in.
So you repeat whatever you're hearing out loud, and that's what's
exactly. Mm-hmm. They kind of speak through me. And a lot of times I just film it for myself, but I also film it for my community because they love it. That's something that they've seen the evolution. I've been vlogging for 12 years, so there was the blonde vegan all the way to channeling fifth dimensional consciousness.
Do you want to go deeper with that? Do you have plans for like to sit with people, want to like put more energy in that way? Or is that too much? Is it, if you're a real empath, which you are, you have to really learn. I mean, I can relate in that way. I had to learn to be able to feel people, but not to take in the energy. But if you're, this is a whole different level, because if you're actually getting profound messages from their spirit angels or their ancestors, that's a lot of energy coming through you.
Yeah. So I used to have goals of being a one-on-one channel, some of my biggest inspirations in this life. That's what they do. And then I realized, based off of my personality, my human design, my energy makeup, that's not really what I'm here for. I could do it. I might even love it, but it might be very depleting. And I don't see myself doing that long term. So I try to do it in more of a large scale way. So I have a platform, it's a meditation platform, but it's also a channeling membership type of thing where people can join. And I more so channel for the collective of the group. And people have the chance to ask me questions. So sometimes it's a personal question. Sometimes it's more of a collective question. And I get to channel individually that way. And I think that fulfills that part of me. Mm. And yeah. I'm always looking to grow and to do more of that. Because what I've found in my healing is that when I don't do that and when I turn that off or I go weeks without channeling or opening up to those realms, I do get sicker. And so I just feel depleted. I feel lack of energy. I don't feel as inspired because I can get really caught up with everything else that I do mm-hmm. as an entrepreneur, with a podcast, interviewing people. But when I'm actually my happiest is when I'm at home channeling, meditating, connecting with this community one-on-one. And that's what makes me really happy. So I do foresee more of that in the future.
Do you have any questions?
Yeah, I have quite a few. When you mentioned the plant medicine, uh-huh. I'm very fascinated by it. Monica and I have not yet. We're open, you know, so we're over.
Amazing.
We're always open. But do you mind maybe sharing one story or one?
Oh, yeah.
It's an epiphany or an experience that you had that was
Definitely.
Transformative.
I think the most transformative experience that I've had was with ayahuasca. And I love that you're asking me about this now, because this morning I told Jonathan, my husband, who you guys know, I'm like, I feel like I had ayahuasca this morning, which not at all, but it can become reawakened in your
right.
system.
I heard that.
And I think with the full moon in Libra, all these things that I'm feeling very emotional, it reawakened some memories. And I had a very emotional morning, but it was so necessary and it was so beautiful. And I think really with ayahuasca, I've done it probably about 10 times between 2018 and before I had my son, so 2021. And oh my gosh, it reminded me of who I am, why I'm here. I realized, and I always believed in eternal souls and we've been here many times. I always felt like an old soul. This was confirmation. I was realizing I am. This is why I feel so old, because I am. And that's a beautiful thing to embrace and to not feel like I'm 33. So many of my friends, they're going out, they're drinking, they're single. That is not my life. And to really love myself for who I am instead of, I was always comparing myself. Why am I so different than a lot of people, or I guess what would be considered normal, socially normal? And that was such an awakening. And then...
So did you see, or was it a feeling experience, or you had vision?
Oh,
vision
full
as well?
Visuals. Oh, I was not here. Like, not in my body. Didn't remember that I had a body. Absolutely in another realm. And that's the place that makes me really happy. So ayahuasca, psilocybin, ketamine therapy with therapists. I've done all of the above. And all of them have given me visions, taught me so much, shown me answers to questions. I went into ayahuasca asking, why am I sick? Why did I get Lyme? I believe that everything happens for a reason. And that's when I was shown the ancestral stuff and how I chose to come to this lifetime, be a pattern breaker for the lineage on both sides. And so all of my ancestors were behind me, cheering me on, and it was beautiful. But I also had to feel their pain.
And that's why you chose that disease?
So that's kind of how it manifested in me, like the pain. I chose to come here and transmute their pain. And they showed me, my ancestors showed me, it's transmuting through this physical illness. That's what your physical vessel chose to experience in this lifetime, to carry the pain, transmute the pain, heal the pain. Because really, if I hadn't have gotten sick, I wouldn't have slowed down. I wouldn't have gone on all these journeys, and I would have just kept going and just trying to be like everybody else, I think.
That's so interesting. Mm-hmm. Do you fear death?
No.
Do you think it's because of these different experiences you've had, or did you never fear death?
I think as a child, I definitely feared death. I think maybe ever since ayahuasca, I don't. And I just see, I believe, how our souls live on. And I believe we'll be with our loved ones in whatever form. And that's something Jonathan's terrified of.
Has he?
That was my other question too.
Has he done it?
Has he done any together or has he done any alone?
So I did it myself for the first time, just me with a bunch of strangers in Santa Cruz. And before we got married, I said, you have to do this with me. It changed me so profoundly. And if you don't see what I have seen, or at least in your own way, it's going to be hard. So he's pretty much up for anything. He didn't even really know how intense ayahuasca is.
Did you research? I would have done hours of research.
But
I don't think Jonathan knew what he was in for. This is a prerequisite for our marriage.
Jonathan never knew what he was in for. He didn't know what Lyme disease was, but he's like, cool, totally not a big deal. Like, we got this. But he never knew any. And he just learned as he went along. And he's had profound experiences with ayahuasca. I think he's sat with ayahuasca about 4 times. He even went recently, and I haven't felt called since becoming a mother just yet, but he went recently, and it's so healing for him in a different way. I was surprised, but it taught me a lot that he didn't see anything that I had seen or have the same experience as me, which is true about that medicine. Everyone's experience is going to be so different, but he's had, it's just healing in his own way. He can handle a lot of medicine, and I just need a little bit of this plant medicine. I'm very sensitive. Mm-hmm. He can handle so much, and he can still run around and play in nature, and he's taking pictures of things, and he's laughing, and I'm having like hysterical exorcisms on the floor, but we're so different in that way. And that's what my soul chose. And he's like a puppy soul, but he's an old soul too.
That is so cute. Mm-hmm. I love that. I kind of picture us. He'd probably be running and frolicking. That's why I'm like resistant.
I know.
I think that, I just relate so much to you and your experiences. It feels similar.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So we're going to ask anything we can share with our listeners about where they can go to
where they can follow you, what you're working on next, or just any message at all.
Yes. So you can find me on The Balance Blonde on Instagram, very active on Instagram, and thebalanceblonde.com. I still blog way back to the blogging days of 12 years ago. I blog every week. I'm writing a new book, and it'll probably be out. It'll be a while. You know how the book process goes, but it's the healing journey, and it's all about how we're our own healers. And then right now, I'm putting a lot of energy into the meditation platform that I mentioned. It's a membership called The Balance Blonde Soul on Fire. And that's where you can listen to channelings. There's hundreds of meditations in there, affirmations for living a healthy life, like pep talks on how to channel and spiritually awaken, all that good stuff. So that's very fun. People can find that just through my website.
Amazing. And so I'm going to check that out too. Yeah, that sounds great.
I'm going to send it to you guys.
Yes. Well, thank you.
This was
so
fun.
So nice. Love.
A wonderful conversation. You guys are amazing.
Thank you for sharing your energy and your light with us. And stay spiritually hungry.
Yes. Such a good name.